Political rallies this election year seem to attract almost as many protesters as they do supporters, and that's on both sides of the aisle. Nowhere, though, is that more evident than at events hosted by Donald Trump. Violence has broken out at a number of Trump's rallies in recent months, and that includes shouting matches, protester ejections, and even some fistfights.
On our way out, we're getting heckled by the crowd, and Donald Trump himself was, how can I put this?
Encouraging.
He was encouraging the crowd. He was encouraging the crowd to, you know, jeer and to encouraging the police to escort me out. And as I was being escorted out, you can see on the video I was hit.
That was Rakeem Jones. He was assaulted at a Trump rally last month. Candidate-sponsored rallies are advertised as doors-open events, but they're not public spaces. Organizers actually have final say on who and what is allowed. Atlanta Journal-Constitution reporter Jim Galloway wrote about this, and he joins me now to talk about it. Hi there.
Good morning.
Now, you say that Georgia has actually, especially Georgia Republicans, have been sort of early adopters of the private campaign rallies. Why do you say that?
All right. Well, we had an incident back in 2014 where the state Republican Party had a rally over up in North Georgia in Dawsonville at a pumpkin farm patch, if you will. And you know, they brought up the whole slate, the whole 2014 slate from governor on down, and everybody gets up and is given a 5 to 10 minute speech, and everybody. Everybody applauds, and you had a videographer there, Nydia Tisdale, who was just doing her thing. All she does is she's a citizen journalist. She goes around and she just videotapes raw video of meetings, and then she posts them up online. And she was doing that. And Ralph Hudgens was up. He's the state insurance commissioner. I don't know if you know Ralph, but he sometimes says things that wind up on YouTube.
He does.
And it's not always good. So he's up there and he remarks on Nydia videographing his speech and says, "Oh, I don't know why you're doing that." And the next thing Ms. Tisdale knows is that she's got somebody whispering in her ear to shut it down, turn it off. And then the next moment, she is being hauled away by a sheriff's deputy, by a Dawson County sheriff's deputy, very roughly.
Slammed into the hood of a police car, I understand.
Well, yeah, on a table in Burt's Pumpkin Farm. This is happening in front of Governor Nathan Deal.
Who says nothing.
The only person who says something is Sam Olens, the attorney general, who had just finished representing Nydia in an open records case over in Forsyth County, an open meetings case. And he gets up on the stage and he says, "What the heck are we doing?" And she has filed a civil suit against.
Still being litigated.
She has filed a civil suit, and not by coincidence, the county has pursued criminal charges against her.
And what are they charging?
Trespassing and obstructing a police officer. And this is the key, this was on private property. This was all on private property. Now, and one of the big issues here is when a rally on private property, when does it become a private event and under what circumstances? I mean, if you issue an invitation, say, "Come on to my yard and let's have a rally for Joe Doakes, who's running for this," and suddenly somebody is saying something that you don't like, how quickly can you get them out?
Which has obviously become a huge issue in this campaign. But how does it change the conversation, if at all, if it's a ticketed event versus a open door event?
Well, this is, you know, in the olden days, when I was a young man, you would have political rallies, and part of the purpose of the political rallies was to let audiences get familiar with the candidate, to let the candidate speak to the audience, make his case, and get his ideas across. And I suppose in some places that does happen. But right now what we've got is a situation where this applies not just to the Trump campaign, but a lot of other political campaigns, Democrat and Republican. In order to get into a rally, you already have to be a supporter of the candidate.
Which is odd to a certain extent, because as you say, part of the idea of a rally was to convince people to vote for you, which would suggest that you're inviting people who are not convinced already. But is it at this point the larger audience people are worried about, the online audience instead?
Exactly. And what happens is the live audience becomes part of the furniture. They are part of the scenery. They are the props and the extras in a videographed event that appears on YouTube or on Facebook or wherever or however. And so a great deal of care goes into making sure that these people are properly enthusiastic, that they don't cause any trouble, and if they do cause trouble, they're shut down as quickly as possible. And the Trump people have gotten very good at this. I know in Georgia this year, leading up to the presidential primary, all their rallies were on what would be considered private ground. They rented, they leased this space, and assumed total control of the space, whether it was in Macon, in Valdosta, or here at the Georgia World Congress Center. If Trump becomes the nominee, and I think right now odds are that he will, you are going to see endless video of first of him saying, "I will pick up anybody's law legal costs if they get in a fight with a protester." And then you're going to see that 80-year-old man clocking the African-American young man up in the stands. I think that was in North Carolina.
Yeah.
You're going to see that time and time and time again. And it's interesting because it's a shift in the way candidates have usually handled things like this. You know, I mean, it's being a political candidate isn't that much different from being a nightclub comedian. You learn to handle the hecklers. You know?
Interesting.
And if you don't handle them right, then that reflects badly on you.
Well, then let's hear Donald Trump. And this is one of the clips that has already been played quite a bit. This is from a rally last month.
Honestly, I hate to see that. Here's a guy throwing punches, nasty as hell, screaming at everything else when we're talking. And he's walking out, and we're not allowed, you know, the guards are very gentle with him. He's walking out like big high fives, smiling, laughing, like to punch him in the face, I'll tell you.
So this has been, and I'm sure you've seen this, in a number of op-eds, that was compared with a clip of Barack Obama handling hecklers in immigration activists when he said, no, let them speak, and he shouted out the audience so they could air their...
And then if I'm not mistaken, then he said, okay, now you've had your say, let me have my say.
Right. Is that the right way?
And that's,
if
that
saying
can,
I'd
that
like
can
to
be,
punch you in the face is the wrong way, is that the right way?
That can be a right way. Or you can use humor to diffuse it. Or you can there are many ways that you can do that. Trump has just chosen the Andrew Dice Clay manner of dealing with hecklers, I think.
All right. So let's talk about this as a trend. Is this the beginning of something that we're going to see on into the future so that people can sort of control the image of a rally is to put it on private property?
Oh, right. Oh, I think that's going to become
all candidates.
Because, look, whether it doesn't matter whether you're a Republican or Democrat, if you're a political strategist or a political campaign worker, you look at what works. And that's worked for Trump. The privatization has worked for Trump.
So what does this mean for our democratic process then, Jim? What are we losing and what are we gaining? One of the things I find important, obviously, for obvious reasons, in your piece is the discussion of journalists and how constricted journalists have been, especially in covering Trump.
Oh, right. Oh, that was actually one of the most interesting aspects. I wrote this shortly after Trump had his last visit here back in March. And very soon after that, I think it was BuzzFeed had a wonderful little piece about they contacted all the news organizations and talked to the camera guys and talked to the producers, all off record. I didn't see any attribution about what the demands were by the Trump campaign. And the demands were by the Trump campaign were that the podium for the TV cameras would be always be in the center.
Yeah, with a straight-on frontal shot.
And the cameras would always make straight-on frontal shots. So you had the situation, you know, this wonderful situation where we're in Atlanta. Trump was saying, "Oh, the media never shows these vast crowds that I'm drawing. Hey guys, you camera operators, pan around here." And they can't do it. He was only allowing the one position that showed his face. It was a remarkable case of stage management.
And we hear even from Sarah McCammon, who's working with NPR right now in their political coverage, that journalists are not allowed free rein. And somebody tried to follow you into the bathroom?
Well, they penned us up. And it's interesting because the law enforcement, they had all the reporters in one location behind some barricades and law enforcement in there with us. And we quickly learned that they were there to protect us from the crowds because of the way that Trump was stirring it up. And, you know, of course, you're in this little island and the crowd's all around you and you do want to talk to people. And so I was about to exit and they said, no, you can't leave now. No, you can't go. And I looked at the young lady and I said, I'm a 60-year-old man. If I tell you that I'm going to go to the bathroom, are you going to come with me? And it took.
I assume her answer was no.
Well, no. She says, let me check. It took about 15 minutes. And then finally they came back to them. They said, no, sir, you will be allowed to go to the bathroom by yourself.
That's Jim Galloway. He's a reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, writer of the Political Insider blog. Thank you so much.
Enjoyed it.